The following is a chat I had with Joey Cascio on what it's like for a youth coach here in the States to change clubs. Actually, you know what? That's not perfectly right. It's more an episode on the decision-making process a coach might go through when they're thinking about leaving their current club and going to a new one. This is many times a nerve-wracking situation, especially if the coaching is one's livelihood. It's just like any profession or occupation. Maybe the grass is greener over there, maybe it's not, but maybe it is. And back and forth you go, and you just don't know until you actually take the leap and experience it for yourself, a big risk nonetheless. It kind of goes without saying, but I'm sure most everyone in the workforce knows this feeling. So we explore what are perhaps the most important considerations when a youth coach in the States is making this decision. This one's for all you coaches out there, but at the same time, if you're not a coach, you're going to glean some good insight into what many coaches are thinking about. Many of you might know Joey from previous episodes or from directly engaging with him over the past 10 years. Actually, it's longer than 10 years. He's been coaching here for 15 years or so. And for the uninitiated, he's coached at all levels, whether it be rec, the lowest club level, up to and including the MLS Academy level. And in fact, when the new MLS franchise LAFC launched, he was the coach hired to start their academy from zero. And that he did. He brought over his then existing FC Man United, which was killing it, and created the other two teams that together would form the start of that academy. His original team, by the way, became a key group for the club with many important players, one of which has already signed an MLS homegrown contract. Joey's a very humble person, so it's up to others to give him the credit he deserves. From my end, Joey is welcome on my squad any day. I can keep going on and on with Joey's coaching capabilities and what a great human being he is, but whatever I say won't do him justice. So whoever ends up being able to work with him is very fortunate. Speaking of which, Joey now coaches in the San Diego area, helping build out a club that is making a name for itself down there in Rebels SC. Shout out to Ryan, the director in that location. Maybe we'll have to bring him on the pod one day as well. But enough of the intro, let's go ahead and get some pearls of wisdom from Joey himself as he discusses the challenges he's personally felt and many coaches probably feel and should consider when they're evaluating a new coaching opportunity at a new club. Here we go. And now, a quick few second mentions of what sponsors this episode. It's the best way to support this podcast, but more important, greatly improve your current soccer situation. First, if you're a coach, you must check out 343coaching.com. There are both free and premium programs for you there. Second, if you're a parent of a youth player looking for how to best put them on a proper path, your solution is at 343masterclass.com. And third, if you'd consider going to a private school for academics, either in the States or in Europe, that also has an integrated soccer program, you should check out acceleratorschool.com. Critically important, these solutions for coaches, for parents, for players, are offered from people who have actually done the work and have an unprecedented track record in the United States. All right, I hope you enjoy this episode. We're just scratching the surface here, folks, but it's an important starting point for us to further expand down the line. Hey, so listen, I won't take up too much of your time because you're a busy man and I'm sure you're dying and you want to go to sleep soon. So we had met last night and I actually forgot what the hell I proposed to you with respect to what the topics could potentially be or the topic could potentially be. The only thing I remember, Joey, is something about maybe talking about the commonalities or differences between coaching at 9 to 12 year olds and then 13 to 15 year olds and 15 to 19 year olds. I honestly do not remember what the hell we even spoke about. Do you remember?
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that you brought up. Another one was, what's it like transitioning from one club to another? Maybe the differences between one club to another club, things like that.
Okay, so how about we start with that? Because I'm actually kind of curious. You know my history, you know Brian's history. There wasn't a lot of club hopping that Brian in particular did. With his coaching, he kind of stuck with whatever team he got for multiple years. And most of the time, it was at the same club unless something happened. For instance, with the quote-unquote famous team, there was a jump to Chivas USA from the youth club Barcelona USA. And then Chivas USA shut down. So it's not like there was any choice. You had to find a new home. And that's why he went to the Galaxy with that crew. But it was always kind of like with the same team and not necessarily leaving a team and a club and going to a brand new club and getting brand new teams there. So I'd be curious to hear your perspective, because I think you've done that on a couple occasions, right?
A number of times, man, probably more than I really would have liked to. But yeah, if I go back to the very beginning when I was at Canyon FC, where I was there for about 5-6 years, and I had built something there, and it just got to a point where probably I felt like I needed to maybe take a step up for my coaching career. And I had tried going to Newport Mesa, which was a small club in Newport Beach. I knew some people over there, and they seeked me out. They were interested in me coming over. And so I said, okay, you know, I'll explore this, had some conversations and decided, okay, I'll try something new. Let's see what happens. But yeah, man, it's interesting. As I've gone through this multiple times, it's not easy. It's very difficult because you're starting new, you're starting fresh. And maybe where you were previously, you've built something, you've maybe established a culture, you've educated the people that you've worked with, you've established a certain level with your teams. So going somewhere new, it's the challenges that I faced are, number one, getting buy-in. And I think that has differed from place to place based on the culture that's present at the club that I've moved to. So at Newport Mesa, it wasn't really a good fit for me. And I didn't last very long, to be honest with you. I realized pretty quickly, like, this just isn't probably a good fit. And then I ended up at FC Man United, a small club in like the Pomona area, Hacienda Heights area. And that I enjoyed very much. I think that what's sort of worked out for me is, I don't know what it is, but I seem to connect well with the Latino soccer community. And I seem to have success in getting buy-in and establishing culture with the people that I work with in those sorts of clubs that have that culture present.
Before I forget, Joey, transitioning from one club to another, it sounds like at least that one move that you described that didn't work out. I'm curious whether there are lessons learned there or any sort of insight that you can offer with respect to, is there any way of predicting whether it will be a good fit for a coach making a change? So let's say you're at Club A and you're contemplating, I'm thinking about moving to Club B for whatever reason, because they want to hire you and offer you more money or offer you better teams or whatever the heck it is. Is there a process maybe that you might go through or somebody might go through and to assess whether it's going to work out for you or not? You know what I mean? Like you mentioned, yeah, the Latino community that you work well with them. Maybe that could be one ingredient. It's like, what's the demographic look like at this club? Oh, okay. It looks like these are folks, you know, that I connect well with and that would work versus not. You understand what my question is?
Yeah, definitely. No, I think you ask questions. You try to get as much information as you possibly can.
What kind of questions?
What's the makeup of the teams? You know, what is the financial situation of most of the players within the club? Things like that. Try to get an idea of what the demographic is. Try to get information. You know, what are some other questions that you can ask to get that?
What is the financial component matter? I mean, I know I'm just asking you, right?
Yeah. So like how many players are on scholarships? How many players are full pay? I think that that's very, very important when you're trying to decide where you're going to coach and who you're going to work with. And over the years, Gary, you know, I've been doing this for many years. So I've learned a lot about the Southern California market. And I think now I have more knowledge when it comes to that. So later on in my career, my decisions have been more based on those types of things, but I have more of that information now. Going back to the move to Newport Mesa, I didn't necessarily know that. And I probably jumped into that situation too quickly without asking those sorts of questions. And yeah, that's definitely probably the most important one is what is the makeup of the teams? What is the financial situation of the teams? How many scholarships? How many full pay?
Why does that matter?
I think it sort of, it gives an indication what players make up your roster. You know what I mean? It gives you an idea of,
if you have a lot of scholarships, you mean, oh, those are probably like maybe better players potentially because you want to recruit or they wanted to recruit them to the team and they're offering a reduced fee or something of that nature. That could be one angle, but the other angle, Joey, could simply be that they don't have the financial wherewithal to pay at all. And the club is simply saying, okay, well, here you go. We're helping you out. I'll give you a scenario. Hey, Joey, we'd like you to come on board. We like how you coach. We've monitored you for quite a while. You work well with youth players. We think you'd be a good fit here. And then you ask them the question, okay, so what's like the composition of the teams that you're considering me coaching, the financial, how many scholarship players do you have is your question to them. And they say, well, Joey, listen, typically we'll have 2 full scholarship players on the team and maybe we'll help out a third if that's possible. Like, what does that communicate to you versus, oh, 0 scholarships or, hey, as many scholarships as you want, we'll try to make that happen for you. You know what I'm saying? Like, what does that communicate to you when you hear a particular number of scholarships?
Yeah, like you said, I think in the beginning, it maybe indicates that, I think when a player is scholarship, it signals that, okay, obviously this player is probably worth a scholarship when it comes to their individual quality. And then it also signals to you as the coach, the flexibility you have to build out the roster in the future. If you are restricted to no scholarships, you're very limited to what you can do. 1 or 2, okay, that's a little bit better. Or if they're willing to go, say, half the roster, man, that gives you a lot of flexibility to really build it out how you see fit. And it gives you the opportunity to bring in some good quality.
Yeah. It's curious. I know we're going off a little bit of a tangent, but I think this is an important discussion because some people who are listening, and I'm aware, obviously, because we've worked in the space for such a long time, there are people who would say, well, what are you talking about, guys? Like, it's youth soccer. What do you mean you want to use the scholarships to build out your roster? I mean, they clearly know that we're talking about building a team that is very competitive, that can win, right? And in a situation here in Southern California, anyways, where winning certainly matters a lot with respect to you being able to work in peace as a coach, you not feeling so much pressure from different elements of the club that you're working out to win, because there's pressure to win, Joey, and whether people like it or not. But some might say, oh, so you're using scholarships to win instead of using scholarships to financially help out those in need. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's those two avenues here, which sure, everybody wants to help out those in need, but the reality is that other component is just as, if not more important in the business that is youth soccer, if we're just being real.
Yeah, absolutely, man.
So like I just said it, right? But
yeah, you did.
it's just part and parcel, in my opinion. If you're considering moving to a new club, these are the sorts of things that you kind of want to get a grip on as to what the culture, the leadership at the club is like. Hey, what do they care about, right? Do they care about, hey, offering the coach this sort of flexibility so that they can build a competitive environment, a competitive team? Okay, Joey, you have lots of flexibility. Go and recruit and go and build the roster as you see fit. You have some economic flexibility there with 3 or 4 scholarships or 2.5, whatever the fuck it is, Joey. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
yeah.
I'm trying to just get down to the fundamentals of what it is you look for and what coaches maybe should be looking for when they're considering making that swap to a new club. And I think you nailed it on the head, and I'm sorry for putting words in your mouth, unless you have another thought with respect to scholarshiping.
No, in terms of scholarshiping, I think we discussed it, man. I think maybe we can bring up some other parts of the equation.
Yeah, tell me what else do you look for? What else is attractive, or red flags maybe?
Yeah, well, one that's difficult here in Southern California is field space. That's definitely hard to come by. So facilities is a big one. Here, every club is battling for field space here. So you'll be in some situations where you have half of a field, which is incredible, or you maybe have a quarter of a field. And I've even seen situations and been in situations where I've had less than that. And that really affects the work that you're able to do with the team that you're working with. So that's a big one, field space.
What would you say is enough field space?
In my opinion, what is necessary to do good work, half of a field.
You need half a field, period, end of story. You can't, a quarter field is just like, it's just not going to cut it. Yeah.
I mean, you can do it, right? Mm-hmm. You can make it work. But the reality is what I've noticed in the teams that I've worked with, that when you have the realistic space that they're going to be playing on the field, and you have the ability to work in that amount of space, choreograph the movements of the players in that realistic space, it makes a massive difference to how they're going to play in the games.
Got it. And would you say, so I guess it matters also maybe the age group that one is coaching. For instance, if you got, say, U9 and U11 or something like that, maybe a half a full field, maybe you don't need half of a full standard size field, right? Maybe you can have it a little bit more reduced. Would you say that's
yeah,
fair?
You know, yeah, I agree with that. I think the younger ages, you don't need a full size half of a field. And there's been some cases where I've used a third of a field, and that's actually worked too, because I had the realistic width of the field. So we were able to choreograph movements with the correct width. We just had to make do in the restricted length of the field that we had.
Makes sense.
But yeah, I would agree with that.
Perfect. But once you go over like U12, U13 at an appreciable level, you kind of need it, the half field. Okay. 100%. So scholarshiping, the economic situation, right? I'll say is a factor. You also want to ask and inquire and think about field space. Anything else? Those are two big ones, obviously.
Well, I think one of the biggest topics in youth soccer is status, which makes a huge difference to the work that you're able to do. Do you need it to do good work? Not necessarily, but at some point, good players, you're going to fight that battle where clubs with status are going to come after your players, and you're going to have to be able to fight that battle. Whereas if you have the status, you provide that platform to the players, maybe you fight other battles, but you know that the status does make a difference in terms of the work that you can do with your teams.
Just to be clear for everybody listening, what do you mean by status?
Yeah, I think it's the leagues that you compete in, that the club compete in, they can offer to the players. And clubs compete in different leagues, but their higher level teams are competing in, say, ECNL or MLS Next. I think those are the two big ones here in Southern California.
Got it. And whether you're in one type league or another, this is a story for another day, but it's all gatekeeper driven. Some invisible men behind a curtain get to say whether you play in this league or you can't play in this league. And it sets up a situation here across the country, frankly, whereby these gatekeepers get to pick and choose which clubs end up winning in the marketplace, in the ecosystem, and which clubs end up being losers in the marketplace. I'm not talking winning, losing necessarily on the field. It's simply, let's say you don't have status, Joey, it impacts everything that club can do, you know, and you already hinted on it from a coach's perspective. If you do not have status of being able to play in MLS Next or in ECNL, well, guess what? your capability of recruiting players. And that's another topic also, because people say, oh, it's youth soccer, you shouldn't recruit players, or what the hell, just coach the ones that you got or whatever. Nonsense. Okay. You can't, first off. So that's another discussion, but you can recruit players and you can't retain your players, because all of a sudden you start getting jacked left and right. You're doing great work, Joey. And then all of a sudden you develop these players for a season or two. And then the clubs that have quote unquote status come and jack your best players. And what does that end up doing? It ends up crippling not only your team, right, and you as a coach, but it cripples your club, because your club can't elevate its profile from where it currently is at, you know, because the teams are capped in how competitive they can be. And then if obviously they can't be ultra competitive, then how the heck can you merit your way into a higher status league, because you're always considered a mediocre club, you see? And the same thing with the coach. How do you parlay yourself into a better coaching position, because it is a career after all, if you're constantly getting jacked and your teams aren't as competitive perpetually? And then lastly, because yes, we can say it's all about the players that end up staying on your team suffer, because you've lost two or three of your best players. So the overall level of your team drops, you see, and the other players now find themselves in less of a competitive environment in their training sessions and everything. And so it also impacts their development.
100%, man. There's a constant feeling of always having to look over your shoulder to protect what you have already built to that point, and retaining, you know, your top guys to just continue the process. And a lot of the work is focused in that area. Just being able to continue what you've already started, instead of diving deeper into, you know, what you can offer the players, you're focused more on that area of the job, and it hinders you. It hinders you as a coach.
Totally. It's energy draining constantly. And yeah, it creates all kinds of friction too, because, you know, parents will come start asking questions of you, start, you know, having a wandering eye. Where should we go next? Should we move our player to a club that has the status and a larger platform, so to speak? And then their posture, and subsequently their player's posture in your training environment, starts shifting. You know, instead of fully being focused on the task at hand and your environment, they already have these other thoughts in their mind. Oh, we're just going to move, you know, at the end of the season, oh, or whatever. And that hinders the player's development in many respects.
Absolutely, man.
It makes your job harder as a coach. But that's a huge point that you just brought up, that you have to have eyes in the back of your head, and it's energy draining, and you can't fully focus on player development, team development, because there's all this other stuff going on.
Yeah. I mean, I did it early on in my career, so I sort of learned early, and it just sort of became part of the process. But it definitely is energy draining, for sure. You're constantly having to have conversations with people just to make sure everything's all good, try to keep things going smoothly. It's constant management from that point to make sure, like, hey, you're in a good place, continue with me, you don't need to look elsewhere. It's nonstop. It never ends.
Yeah. And I'm not shying away from competition. I don't say that everybody should be insulated from competition. You should always have everything at your disposal. You shouldn't have to compete for the services of the player, or the family, or the customer, or whatever you want to call them. But if it's a level playing field, and correct, it's not a level playing field because you have a gatekeeper who anointed the club next door a club with status and did not anoint you. And so you're at a severe disadvantage, and they're picking winners and losers in the marketplace, Joey. It just fucking sucks, man. I wish everybody could just compete to be in MLS Next, and people who merit it can be in MLS Next, and people who don't merit it get demoted or relegated from MLS Next. And same thing with ECNL and everything else under the sun. Okay, so really quick. So you're a coach, you're assessing a new club, whether you want to go to another club. Finances are important. Field space is important. What was this third thing that we just finished talking about is also important?
Status or the leagues that the club competes in.
Exactly. Status. Yeah, exactly. Other possible things to consider.
I'll share this. This might be a little controversial, but it happens here in Southern California, where a big club has identified a coach with a good team. That club wants to bring in those players. And sometimes they'll approach the coach and try to bring the whole package over all at once. Anybody that's in that situation, I have a friend who currently is kind of going through that, and I've shared with him, like, hey, man, just make sure the club value you and your work and don't want to just get your players from you. I've seen it happen before, and it seems to be a tactic that is used here, at least in Southern California, maybe elsewhere in the country. So yeah, I would just, during the process, have the conversations, make sure that they value you as a coach and your work and what you will offer the club long.
Awesome. And is this something that you get through maybe the interview process or something? Like how do you assess that? You're just seeing how they are recruiting you and how they are courting you as the coach. You just have to develop a sixth sense for this thing.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of that. If they highly value you as the coach, I think they will offer you some of the top teams that they have in the club. If they're proposing maybe, you know, a second tier or third tier team in the club, then I think that sends a clear signal to you as the coach. And then maybe your players would be put on the top tier team at the club. I think that that's something to look for. But yeah, I think it's a lot of it is just having conversations and maybe just developing a feeling that you get through those conversations.
So a lot of it could be experience based too. You just have to go through the process and fail sometimes and have success other times, and then be able to read people 5 or 7 or 10 years later down the road. Unfortunately, right? So much is experience based. It sucks.
Yeah.
There's like no recipe. Like if you haven't lived through it, fuck. You know, because everybody wants the answers, Joey. And sometimes it's just like, guys, I mean, I could write the book or the chapter in the book, and you can read the chapter of the book. And it's just until you live it, it's just theory until you actually live it.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no substitute for the experience.
Got you. Okay. Very good. What else? What else? We're just stuck on this coaching journey thing. Like how to can a coach properly navigate their career? Again, it's so crazy that some people might be thinking negatively when I say career for the coach. It's so crazy that some people here will actually think negatively of me saying or considering a coaching career. Because what are you talking about, coaching career? It's all about the kids. You should just like be out there and teaching the kids for free. You know, they don't view you as teachers, Joey, that you are. And I'm kind of on a mission, multi-year mission here. It's been a while to change that mindset. You guys are teachers, not academic teachers. You're not teaching math, science, or English, but you're teaching this sport, okay, which is an activity, a human activity. And you are a mentor. And you have apprentices under your tutelage. People need to view it that way too. This is not something that should be viewed as exclusively volunteer work. And for those who view it that way, I would say, hey, whatever it is that you do for a quote unquote a living, go to your boss tomorrow and say, no, listen, I'm going to work for free from now on because I care about the pencils that we manufacture a lot. The pencils that we manufacture do good in the world. People need writing instruments. Okay. So I'm going to work for free. I challenge everybody, go out. If you're an engineer, an accountant, a banker, whatever it is, go to your boss tomorrow and say, I'm going to work for free, buddy. Because that's how coaches feel in this country. Everybody points the finger at coaches. Oh, you guys should fucking do it for free. Volunteer. You shouldn't charge any money. It's one of my pet peeves, Joe. Sorry, I went off on a rant.
No, I mean, I've heard you share that the perception can be that a coach runs two sessions a week and coaches a game on the weekend. It's not that big of a deal. But at least here in Southern California, from what I see, it is a very competitive marketplace. And there are these big clubs here, they take it very seriously and they want to win. They want to develop good players. And the coaches that work at these clubs, that's how they view it. They view themselves as a serious practitioner. Whether they do a good job or not, that's a different story, but they all take it seriously and they all want to do a good job. And it's a career, like you said. It's working every day to try to make the work that they're doing better for the kids.
Got it. How about this one, Joe? Ambition of the club. Is that something that you have in mind? Maybe when you're looking or somebody wants to hire you or you're considering maybe making a different step to another club is, hey, ambition.
Absolutely. I think that's important. The ambition of the club needs to be in line of the ambition of you as a coach, so that when you take a job, you have a vision for what you want to do. And if the club isn't in line with that sort of vision, it's going to be very hard to be able to achieve what you want as a coach. So yeah, I would say that that's another important part of it.
And sometimes it depends on where the coach is in their particular career, if they view it as a career, right? Because if you're just starting out, there is something to be said about paying your dues, and you can't be out there trying to be all picky. Oh, no, the club's not ambitious enough for me. Or no, they're only going to give me the B team instead of the A team. And you only have 2 years' experience. You know what I mean, Joey? So
100%.
maybe after a while that you've accomplished something, you always want to take that next step up, and then you can ask those sorts of questions. Otherwise, you look like a, I don't know what you look like. You know, put yourself in the DOC shoes, put yourself in the hiring manager shoes. Oh, here's this guy. He's, I don't know, maybe he was a soccer dad, and nothing wrong with soccer dads, but maybe he's a soccer dad who just now decided to start coaching soccer. And he's like, well, how ambitious is the club? Am I going to get 3 or 4 scholarships? Do I get the A team? I think I should have the flagship team of the club. I have all these ideas. I read Pep Guardiola's book. You know, if I'm the club guy, I'm like, come on, dude, let's get real.
Yeah. No, when I first started, I had zero coaching experience. I had played, but even then, I had to volunteer my time for 6 months and just show up and be at the training sessions and work with the teams and show up at the games. And then I was able to land a few teams, two teams, I think, at the time. And then even after my 4, 5, 6 years at that club, I wasn't particularly picky, you know. It was a good situation that landed in my lap, but I was like, all right, yeah, let's do it. I probably started to make sure that the ambition was in line with my own ambition. I don't know, maybe 7, 8, 9 years into my career. Early on, it was just about gaining the experience.
Yeah. So after you have some experience, I'm curious, how many teams do you think, I'll just ask the question for you personally. How many teams do you think you can personally manage and do a great job at? You know, where's that threshold where it's like, man, if I get one more team, then I'm not going to be able to maximize, you know, player development for each team or team development for each team.
Yeah, I think two is probably the maximum. Ideally
Three.
one, because then everything, all your full focus, all your efforts are into one team. And when you're doing the recruiting and session planning, game planning, parent management, all these different things, it adds up. And so more than two, it's very, very difficult.
So if you get three, let's say, just to throw out a number there, what would you say your quote unquote efficiency then looks like for each team? Is it you can do 70% of what you could be doing for each team? Is it 60? Is it 50? Is it 85%? You understand my question?
Yeah, I'm going to say probably about 60%, because
Oh,
your
wow. It's a
attention
big
gets,
drop. Huge.
yeah, your attention gets spread out over, you know, all the different areas that you have to manage for each team. It becomes very difficult. And in the past, and I'll admit it, like there, when I've had three teams, there's been two teams that sort of take up a lot of my attention. And the third team is kind of like, I do the best I can, but I put most of my energy towards those two teams. It's impossible to do, I think, three teams at 85% or higher.
So I would say
60.
Got you. And some of that is a function of experience too, right? Because if it's the first time you've ever managed three teams, the efficiency is probably lower than if you've been doing three teams for 4 years straight, right? You probably get into a groove and you know how to optimize things and be, so there's some factor there, but okay. So you would say about 60%. That's interesting. I've never thought about that, by the way, with trying to quantify how much team development is compromised or player development is compromised the more teams you have, which is kind of interesting, Joey, because if you look at the academies, the pro team academies across the world, so many of them, I mean, I don't have the statistics in front of me. I don't do these studies, but I go off of just my experience with, I don't know, a dozen, two dozen clubs overseas. Each category has their own dedicated coach. You know, if you're in Barcelona, there's the U19 coach. There is the U17 coach. And they're not doing U19 and also U15 and then a little bit of U4. No. And sometimes there's assistants even that are just dedicated to that one single academy team. And they're not spread across three teams, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think, Gary, where it gets the most difficult is recruiting and managing your roster. To do a good job, you have to constantly be evolving your roster. And to do that for three teams, it's almost impossible. You to be able to sit there and watch games for three different age groups, know the player pool at each of those age groups, be in contact with players that you're trying to recruit for three different age groups, it becomes very difficult. And when you don't evolve your roster, you can run into problems. If the roster from 1 year to the next stays the same, well, the good players are usually asking, where's the good players that are coming in? I want better players around me, right? And that leads to problems. You potentially lose your top players. They leave. And then maybe the mid-tier players start asking questions like, hey, well, these guys are leaving. What's going on? I think that's where it becomes most difficult, is when you're trying to constantly evolve your roster to make sure that it's developing in a way that it's getting better. And it's impossible to know three different age groups at a very good level when you're coaching three teams.
Yeah, if you want to do great work, right? Because people can cruise, skate by and just coach the three teams and get their paycheck or whatever and not do what you just described. And I think that's most cases, right? But if you want to do great work, then you have to do what you just described, and then you're probably screwed. You're right with three teams, man. You're really screwed, actually. Never mind. especially here in this country in youth soccer, you are alone, Joey. It's not like you have an assistant coach, like a dedicated assistant coach or two assistant coaches, no chance, who are contributing to what you just described. And there's no scouting department in the club that's doing all this work for you either. You know, hey, Joey, listen, we've scouted the whole age group. We've whittled down to these 10 targets. Just go and check out these 10 targets and let us know which one you want us to go after hard. You know, what's our first choice, second choice, third choice, and then they go do it for you. No, it's all on you, one single person, which is fucking bananas. And then you got the fucking people saying, oh my God, the fucking coaches are making a shit ton of money. What are you talking about? You fucking to coach two teams, it's a 40-hour-a-week job already if you want to do great work.
Yeah. And that's where these big clubs who have that status that we talked about earlier, they have a leg up on everybody because the players just sort of, you know,
they come to them.
Yeah, they go that direction and they don't have to be doing that work. And they're at a massive advantage over the other clubs.
Yeah, no question. All right. I think we covered a lot of ground, man. I didn't prepare for this at all. In fact, I didn't even know what the hell we had talked about yesterday. So I didn't even remember. Is there anything else that you remember in our chat yesterday
No, I think we brought up a few different things, but it's probably a different topic for another time.
All right, dude, this is fun.
No, thank you. This is good. This is good for me too, man. Just to talk and discuss this kind of stuff.
Yeah, so many, it's so strange that the community here doesn't do this more often. Yeah, even within the community of coaches at a particular club, they once in a while, I know that there are clubs and there are little get-togethers sometimes, and coaches form friendships and maybe go out to eat when they're at a tournament and shoot the shit, but it's not like this.
No, the conversations are very different, man. Very, very, very different.
Very political in nature, yes?
Yeah, that, and it's interesting, Gary. What I've noticed over the years is there's more, club soccer has become more about sort of organizing and managing the parents and, you know, oh, we're going to do this program, or, hey, we're having tryouts. How are we going to organize that? Which is necessary, but there becomes less and less of the conversations about soccer and how do we make that better? How do we create good players, develop good teams? And yeah. So the conversations have just gone more and more in that direction. So it's different having Got conversations it. Like this.
It's a big snooze fest. I don't like hanging out with bureaucrats bureaucrats who have coaching jobs, even worse.
Yeah, man. Me neither.
Don't get yourself in trouble, man. You just nod your head. All right. All right, Joe, let's do it again though. Yes.
I would love to.
All right, brother. Have a good night, dude. Put those kids to bed.
You too, Gary. Talk to you soon.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches. You can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. And if you're interested in a solution that blends both academics and soccer, there's even the opportunity to do this in Europe as well. To learn more, visit acceleratorschool.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.